on WGTD HD2. Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more, airing right now on HD2. For more information, go to WGTD.org or dial 564-3030.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Hello, listeners. This is Marlo Harmon with Community Matters at WGTD 91.1 HD. And today I have three exciting guests with me, and they are a part of the Racine Drug Court. I actually have Judge Patak, who is Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court Judge. I have Jennifer Mador with Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court Evaluator, and I have Jennifer Hoffmeister, who's Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court Coordinator. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Thank you so much for joining me. This issue with regards to alcohol and drugs and how we can work with individuals in Racine who have addictions and problems that bring them to jail and sentencing, and how we as a community can work with individuals to get them to be more productive in our community is a passion of mine, considering that I am an alcohol and drug counselor myself. So it is a pleasure for me to discuss something that is of a passion of mine and also a background of mine. So I would like to know a little bit about how each of you have gotten involved in this, and what do you bring to the table to make sure that the team that's working on this project is successful and actually meeting its goals. Judge Patak, would you like to start?
Sure. I'm a judge, and I've been a judge for 27 years.
Okay.
Before that, I was a prosecutor. I was the DA in Racine County for 8 years. And one of the things I did as a prosecutor was to prosecute a lot of the drug cases in the community.
Yes.
So as a judge, and with my experience, I've also been the chief judge in the past and understanding the process. And I think that what I bring to the process is an understanding of the issue, also the understanding of how the process works, and an appreciation for looking for alternatives to a different approach rather than using jail or prison as a consequence for the behavior.
Okay. Alternatives to revocation and alternatives to incarceration, I believe, are some things that will definitely help our community and the families that are involved. Now, we do have Jennifer Mador with us as well, and she's the Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court Evaluator. Tell me a little bit, what does an evaluator do, and what's your background that helps with this team?
Well, I received my Master's of Social Work a few years ago, and I've been working in program evaluation and grant writing for about 23 years.
Okay.
So when Racine County received a grant, I believe in 2009, they needed someone to monitor the grant and crunch their numbers, and I thought, that's what I want to do.
Okay.
So I've been doing that since 2009.
All right. Great. Thank you for that. And then last but not least, we have Jennifer Hoffmeister, Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Coordinator. Tell us a little bit about you and how you bring value to the group.
I started with the program in 2013, and my background consists of being an independent clinical supervisor and AODA counselor.
Okay.
14 years working as a substance abuse counselor, and I do a lot of the assessments and screenings to get people into our program.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome again, guys, and really appreciate your opportunity to participate in this segment. Some of the questions that I have for the group. First, I would like to know, what is the vision or the mission overall for the drug courts? I know that it's been around for some years. I think someone said as late as 2006.
Yes.
2006. Yes. Could you tell me a little bit, Judge Patak, about the vision, mission of it?
Sure. There is an actual written mission statement. The team has spent a lot of time in training and development, and we have a policy and procedure manual, and lots of detail has been hashed over and developed to make sure that the program is well-structured.
Okay.
And I'll just read you what the mission statement is. The mission of the Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court is to improve public safety by providing more intensive supervision and services to convicted nonviolent drug and or alcohol offenders.
Okay. I know that in my background, because I work at a prison and because I'm an alcohol and drug counselor, being able to decrease incarceration helps our community overall. Jennifer Hoffmeister, could you explain maybe how the drug court is trying to work with regards to meeting that mission of providing safety by decreasing some of the return to incarceration?
Through our program, Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court is an alternative to incarceration. So offenders, when they come into the program, they're entering into a plea agreement. And oftentimes then, upon change of plea and sentencing, they get out. They live in the community, and they are supervised under intense supervision to ensure public safety.
Great, great. Okay. I'm interested in knowing what social changes have occurred that has made the drug court necessary. I know that there have been some changes, of course, in our communities and just overall in our nation. But could any of you just let me know what are some of the social changes that have occurred in Racine and our surrounding areas that make this necessary?
Well, we began in our treatment court as focusing on the issue of alcohol and driving, basically. And as it progressed, we moved from that to treating people or dealing with people who were charged with other offenses related to drug use. It may not be a drug charge, but it could also be something like forgery, if they're taking someone else's money to buy drugs.
Okay.
It could even be burglary. In some cases, it's other types of crimes. The idea is to focus on those people and to bring them into the process where they're highly supervised, required to submit to random testing at least twice a week, required to attend self-help meetings, required to move forward on a plan to improve their lives, and thus that is benefit to the community. The changes that we've seen, or at least that I've seen since I've been in the program since the beginning in 2006, is we've moved from alcohol cases to cases involving other types of drugs. After we got into that area, things changed because we deal with a different type of client. And then, all of a sudden, the whole issue that everybody's aware of and talking about all the time now, the issue of substance abuse related to heroin,
I was going to say that has increased.
Has really bloomed, and it's become a really serious, concerning community problem. And by its very nature, because it's so much more addictive than the other substances that people were abusing, the route that a lot of people take to get there and to get to that level of use, you know, the fact that an overdose very often is fatal. We read more and more about the number of fatalities due to overdoses of that substance.
Yes.
It's a completely different ballgame, quite frankly, in dealing with the heroin addict.
I have definitely seen, and many of the research has also shown, that there is an increase in opiate addiction and use, as well as heroin addiction and use. I think I may have even read that it's almost trumping marijuana usage, but it's definitely a dangerous drug, and it impacts our community negatively. So with Wisconsin and moving, with Wisconsin and it having a large alcohol consumption as a state, and moving from focusing on that to other drugs, when you say that you have seen the type of client change, what do you mean by that as far as how you implement this program?
Well, I think the clients have higher levels of need, are more into a criminal lifestyle, if you will. criminal thinking is something that you and I know from our work, it's an approach that people take to the way they think, which needs to be changed as part of the process. And so we're getting to a higher level of criminogenic needs and people thinking in a criminal way as it relates to the heroin use and the type of people we're seeing in the process. In my opinion, it's a lot more difficult for us to have success with them than in the past with people who are not at that level. But statistically, nationally, they inform us that the most effective type of client for us to address with this approach that we use, the treatment court, is to identify people who are high risk, high need. High risk in terms of their behavior, a high need in terms of their treatment needs based upon their addiction. Okay. And that's the type of client that we look for. That's the criteria for them to come into our program.
Okay. Do they have to be within the Racine counties? For example, can Milwaukee individuals who have been arrested in Racine participate in the Racine courts, Jennifer Hoffmeister?
This program is for Racine County residents only.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I will say, though, that we are open because in one of the treatment courts, I can't remember which one it was, we have taken people who've been sentenced in other areas and live in Racine County where their supervision's been transferred to Racine. The issue is before the Department of Corrections can provide supervision under probation and parole rules, they have to live in the county where the agent is working and assigned. So that's the geographic limitation.
Okay. All right. Tell me, what is the typical background of your client? Is it men? Is it women? Is it individuals in their 20s, 30s? Is it typically somebody, this is their first time in front of drug treatment? Could you give me just a little of the demographics about your typical client?
There isn't a typical client, in my opinion. We scan the gamut of people in terms of people who you see on the street. We've had middle-class housewives in the program. We have had middle-aged men in the program. We've had young people as young as 18, 19 in the program who are just starting out. Generally, because of our requirement that they be high risk, high need, you're not going to see a first-time offender come to us. It's generally the people who are farther down the road. Almost all have, although I'm surprised sometimes, people don't have a treatment history, which surprises me when you look at what they've lived through in their lives and the contact they've had with the system. But most generally, they have a treatment history, and they've had the opportunity in the past to, you know, to understand the issue and try to address it. This approach is different, however, in that it combines all these other things, including regular appearance in court for reviews where they talk to me in court in the presence of all the other participants about their progress. And it's designed to support their performance by a method of incentives and to address shortfall or errors or problems with a system of sanctions.
Okay. Jennifer Madure, with regards to the team, who all makes up the entire team? I know that it isn't just the three of you. Who all makes up the team that goes through the brainstorming and the decision making to make this successful?
Well, we have, of course, the judge. We have an assistant district attorney, a public defender, someone from Behavioral Health Services in Racine County, probation and parole. Am I forgetting anyone?
Someone from the Sheriff's Department.
And the Sheriff's Department.
And someone from the Sheriff's Department. So do you guys meet regularly to discuss things? How often do you meet? And what are some of the things that you discuss as a team to improve on the success of the program?
We meet every other week.
Okay.
Right before court.
Okay.
And we discuss the progress of each participant before that time, and if we need to give any sanctions, that's when that decision is made.
Okay.
Or incentives also. If someone's doing a really good job, giving them kudos in court,
that's
always a good thing.
That's good. Awesome. What have been some of the rewards and benefits of the program that you have seen. What are some of the benefits that you have seen since its existence in 2009?
We have had about 126 people participate. We currently have about 35 active participants. We have graduated successfully 52 people. Not all people graduate successfully. Our graduation rate is at about 50%, which the national average for success is between 50 to 60%, if my memory serves me correctly.
Okay.
So we're slightly low. We'd like to be higher. Always strive to do better. So you know, those are generally the figures in terms of the successes.
Okay. And what have been some of the challenges? One of the challenges that I just noticed from what you're saying, the success rate, the graduation rate, is slightly lower than the national average, between 50 and 60%. So what are the challenges that make the graduation rate, even from Racine compared to the national rate, so low? 50 to 60% isn't really a solid percentage for success. So could you tell me why there would be, what are some of the challenges that makes those numbers a little lower than maybe ideally?
I think the nature of addiction, which is, it's an illness.
Yes.
It's something which never goes away from someone's life. Once they're an addict, they're always an addict. And so, you know, accepting the fact that relapse is a symptom of the disease
okay.
is a big step for everybody, whether it's, you know, us working in the court or the public in general. Because I think most people think, in general, that if someone's an addict, they can quit. You know, I'm not an addict. I don't use. I'm not addicted to substances. And if they've never been there, they don't understand the issue with respect to the chemistry, the physiology,
exactly.
the mental process that's involved in being an addict.
Yes.
And if you once you're an addict, you're always just that far. And you can't see me, but I'm holding my fingers together, pinching really hard. You're just that far from relapse.
Yes.
And always on guard, always vigilant. And we try to give them the tools to address that. And I think that when you combine that issue with lifestyles and the fact that people have been thinking in a criminal way,
mm-hmm.
And you look at the things that are difficult in their lives, that I think accounts for the problems that people have in being successful.
Okay.
I think in terms of the program itself, we try to work with people. And then, you know, we're not automatically removing people from the program if they relapse.
Mm-hmm.
We try to address a relapse with a treatment response.
Okay.
We try to address other things such as lying with responses. I think we go the extra mile to try to keep people in the program.
Okay.
But again, we have to work in balance this with what the requirements are of the Department of Corrections with respect to how long a person can remain in the program. We get a lot of people who are coming to us not as newly sentenced individuals, but who are there as an alternative to revocation.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, that's a different ball game altogether.
Okay.
So,
Something else, too, I'd like to add is I think also in addition to what Judge Patak said, but it's also the stigma of addiction in itself for people to enter into the program, to go to the self-help groups, to stay sober. Especially with women and carrying that stigma if they have small children.
Yes.
But on the positive side, mm-hmm. if you were there to see the successes, and that's what we celebrate is the successes of people. We do a little graduation ceremony. We often have people who are graduates come back, and we go places to present about the program. And very often at conferences we attend and sessions that we hold, we have graduates who are willing to speak publicly and tell others about what the effect of the program has been on their lives. And it's pretty compelling to hear someone tell you that, you know, they came to us where they've had overdoses in the past and have been saved by a family member who found them unconscious.
But for
that, they'd be dead. And they recognize that if it weren't for the treatment court and their process, the process that they've involved themselves in,
mm-hmm.
they'd be either in prison or dead.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
And to have someone who's recovering and being successful at it stand before us or before a group of people and through their tears say that but for the treatment court, you know, it saved their lives,
mm-hmm.
To tell us that they've been reunited with their family, to have families tell us thank you for giving us our son back, it's okay. all pretty compelling stuff. It's like we try to celebrate the successes.
That's awesome. That really is good, especially the graduation. Just any form of small celebration for the accomplishment of coming, overcoming something so big like addiction. It's those small kudos that really do matter many times. You said something briefly about eligibility. There's criteria that must be met for an individual to participate in the program. Would anyone know about what are some of the criteria that a client needs to meet before they even become eligible? I'm sure not everyone who has an addiction is eligible for the drug court program.
Well, one of the eligibility criteria is they have to have a pending current legal charge occurring in the system. And the DA's office, you know, it has to be willing to move towards making an offer that involves successful participation and completion of drug court. We also, Judge Patak had also previously talked about, they have to meet the criteria of high risk, high need. So during the evaluation process and when we meet as a team, we review the assessments and we make sure that they truly do have a treatable drug and alcohol issue. We also make sure that the individual that is applying to get in this program truly does have high need. There is the risk of relapse. There is the mm-hmm. risk of repeated behaviors and got the criminal thinking in the background.
What type of assessment or questionnaire or do you work with maybe an agent or someone to determine the eligibility for the client?
Well, I'm the one that does the assessment, and I will meet with them in my office or I'll meet with them in jail, depending on whether or not they're out on bond. And I sit down, I do a clinical evaluation with them. We also use an LSRI, a screening tool, to check for high risk, high need. And that's just a tool, but it's a conversation I sit down, I have with them, and as an AODA counselor, I'm able to make that diagnosis. If we need also further diagnosis for any mental health, we can pursue that as well.
Okay, so it also, so there's possibility of dual diagnosis treatment through the drug court?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, that's very good. To be able to provide a program for individuals that may have some mental health issues as well as addiction issues and then work through those so that they don't recidivize or recommit crimes is good. Now, I do have to admit, a few months ago, there was a town hall meeting in which the drug court participants provided some information with regards to where you will be moving forward in the future with goals and just providing some information to the community. And I attended the town hall discussion with regards to that at the Golden Rondale, which was informative and actually great. One of the things that I do know that was presented at this discussion is that the diversity of the clients that participate in the drug court doesn't necessarily represent the individuals that are incarcerated. Wisconsin has the highest incarceration rate of African American males in the United States, and I believe in the nation, in the world, but I know in the United States for sure. But at that discussion, the participants don't match up with the percentage of individuals that are incarcerated. So I would like to know, and I think you, Judge Patak, had talked about wanting to make some changes so that it can be more representative of those that are incarcerated. Could you speak a little bit on that and provide us some information on how you plan on changing that going forward?
Sure. Well, I have to say I've attended a lot of different conferences at a lot of different levels on this topic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody recognizes from the beginning in their various area of expertise and work that there are lots of socioeconomic factors that we aren't going to be able to change in what we do that might be driving some of this, all right, mm-hmm. that affect this. On the other hand, we need to look at what we do and the numbers that we have and look to those numbers to try to figure out what is the reason if we have some way to affect change. In September of last year, we convened a conference at Wingspread that included The two teams in Racine County that service drug courts or treatment courts, the two teams in Kenosha, the two teams in Walworth County.
Uh-huh.
We brought in national experts to talk about the topic of diversity and trying to address those issues. And then we came up with an action plan and trying to improve the representation of minorities in the treatment courts. And, you know, one of the things that came out of the action plan was for us to try to do a better job of getting information out to the community about the treatment courts. So with the help of people in the community, there was a video that's been produced that was played at the Golden Rondell, which
it
you saw,
was, and I did
to
see
make
that.
It available to the community to go out primarily to churches in the community to try
okay.
to get the information out. Recognizing that, you know, the best inroad into the population is to get the information to the community people who are, you know, in charge and families and so on, to let them know what's there in the event they have a family member who might have the need to participate. Another thing we decided to do was to try to get information earlier to people who are coming into our process.
Okay.
So we tried to design a some questions that are added to the intake questionnaire that's used when people are new arrests in our jail to ask some questions about their personal habits with respect to drug and alcohol use, and then to make available to them at that level information about the treatment court. We've got, in the last few months, we've added a website that makes the information available more easily to people in the community by going on the Racine County website and going to the clerk of courts listings and looking for the drug court website, the page, where you can get information about the court, what the requirements are, who to contact, that sort of thing. So we have an action plan that we developed. There are other things on the action plan as well, but, you know, we're aware of the issue, trying to address it at things that we can affect mm-hmm. where we do and what we do in our work, recognizing we're not going to go out and cure, you know, social ills that might be the cause of some of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we obviously saw and recognized the issue because we were concerned about wondering, scratching our head, saying, well, you know, we look at the jail population
yeah.
in our community. And we
I
look
mean,
at
Racine has a couple of jails and a couple of prisons.
Right. And you look at, and you look at the population in the treatment court, and
yes.
it doesn't match.
Right.
There's a higher percentage of minorities, whether it's women, Hispanics, or blacks.
Yeah.
In the general population in the court system as compared to the treatment court. So
mm-hmm.
it's an issue we're aware of. Women, we decided that we needed to come up with a more specific treatment modality that's addressed to women's needs.
Okay.
One of the things that's happened there is a program that we've tried to use a couple of times. It's called WOW, Women of Worth. It's done through Wheaton Franciscan and has funding and so on. To try to address that need. So we're trying, and, you know, certainly we have a long way to go yet, but we are looking for ways to try to address the issue.
Okay.
I think one other thing, too, that we did talk about as a team that's important to mention in light of the high opiate use and heroin use
yes.
in Racine is also to our work with NELP providers for clients requiring medication-assisted treatment
mm-hmm.
to help them in their sobriety.
Jennifer Medore, would you like to add to that on what are some of the ways that the team is improving access to diversify?
Well, I wanted to share some statistics because I'm the one on the team that loves numbers the most.
I love numbers too.
Good. I was looking at our referrals since the beginning of the program.
Okay.
And the first 5 years between 2006 and 2010, 11% of the referrals were African-American. For the second five-year period, 2011 to 2015, the average has been 21%. So we're improving. In 2015, so far, 25% of the accepted referrals are African-American. So we are making improvements.
So there are improvements with regards to referrals, but from the referrals, then who makes the final decision on who's accepted once the referrals have gone?
Well, those are accepted.
Okay, so when you say referrals, it means
yes.
accepted individuals.
Yes, I'm sorry,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the team decides. It's a team decision. It's no one person's decision as to who comes in. The team decides.
Okay.
Just so it's clear.
I love the point that you made with regards to the action plan for women and increasing that population for the drug court and working with WOW. What other community organizations are you working with to improve the African-American or minority period clientele? Are you working with an NAACP on how to get the information out, or are you working on, are you working with United Way or any of those forms of organizations as well, in addition to WOW?
There is a group in the community which is focused on looking at alcohol and drug issues in the community. Mm-hmm. They were instrumental in getting a group together in 2005 for a seminar that included presentations from existing drug courts in the state to see whether they could get interest in the community before we started our program. Mm-hmm. That group has produced the video that I'm mentioning to you.
Okay.
And they're out trying to disseminate the information to the community. Jennifer Bias, who's with the Public Defender's Office,
yes,
but also is involved in the group,
okay,
is one of the movers there trying to get that accomplished. And she was, in fact, the moderator at the Wings or the Rondell event that you referred to earlier.
Yes. Okay. Well, it does seem like Racine is being very proactive in the issue of drug addiction and our community safety overall. I also know that the program or the organization RIC is also involved in doing something that is to decrease incarceration overall. So we are definitely working as a whole, it seems like, as a community to work on this issue. If someone wanted to participate, if someone wanted to get more information or get involved, how would they do that? What steps would they need to take to get involved if they were interested?
Well, I think that the first thing that they should do is contact their attorney and express an interest in wanting to take part in this program to find out if they're an eligible candidate. Because our program also does require someone to take part in the program for 18 months. So if they don't have legal charges that would get them on probation for 18 months, they wouldn't be eligible for the program.
Okay.
They're always welcome, too, to contact myself as a coordinator for the program or talk to a family member to get information to their attorney.
Okay. I know that one of the things that was mentioned at the Golden Rondell a few months ago was how the program saves our community money, that it actually is cost effective to work on reducing incarceration instead of incarcerating individuals, alternatives to incarceration. Can anyone speak on how that helps the cost for our community overall?
Sure. That's really multi-layered.
Okay.
You think about the effect of someone who's in the criminal justice system and is addicted and unable to make choices to be productive.
Yes.
If they become sober or clean for a period of time and they're able to get a job, earn an income, support a family, pay for things that they need in life, are productive in terms of holding a job, have a sense of worth, clearly there's a benefit to the community. I think we have never done a cost-benefit analysis in Racine County on a complicated level, but nationally, the figures show that where they have been done, that for every dollar spent in a treatment court with high-risk, high-need people,
yes,
the community saves approximately $3. So
okay,
it's cost-effective.
I'm going to play devil's advocate real quick and just ask this question. I just mentioned that Racine has two prisons, adult prisons in Sturtevant. There's a juvenile prison in Racine. There's our jails. If we continue to decrease incarceration, how will the jails, how will the prisons continue to benefit our community? Or does that really matter when it comes to this? Because the outcome of it benefits everyone? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that this process is designed to try to make sure that the people who need to be in jail and prison are in jail and prison, and those people that don't need to be in jail and prison aren't. Clearly, there's a segment of the population. There are people out in our community, unfortunately, who are dangerous, committing serious crimes, and they would not at all be appropriate for this program.
Mm-hmm.
One of the primary objectives is to address the issues of nonviolent offenders, okay? So there will always be the need for prisons. Unfortunately, I don't think crime is going to go away.
Okay,
right?
True.
But we want to take that segment of the population who we identify as being addicted, substance dependent, and not dangerous, and take them and try to address their issues with this process, which then takes them out of the jail, the prison, et cetera. And again, if they do something that, you know, isn't appropriate, they know that they could end up in jail or prison as a consequence for not being successful here. So, you know, there are savings that come from that, but again, it's understanding who the people are we are treating here, and that's nonviolent, drug-addicted, alcohol-addicted defendants, in some cases people who are dual-diagnosed with also mental health issues.
Perfect. That's good news, because many individuals will see this as a way to just put criminals back on the street. And so being able to understand that one of the eligibilities for the clients is that they're a nonviolent threat to our community is something that is definitely key. Can anybody speak on some of the future goals over the next 2 to 3 years that may be offered to improve the program overall?
I think one of the goals that we definitely want to work on that will improve our program is we would like to really work with Kenosha County Drug and Alcohol Court to get a solid alumni group going of our graduates.
Oh, very good.
We felt that that might also work to retain people into the program when they see more successful people coming back. We do have graduates now that occasionally come back and share their story, but it would be really good to have a solid working group. We also plan on, in October, going to a Wisconsin State Standards training for treatment courts so that we're able to make sure that our program is meeting up to the standards that we're supposed to abide by. Another thing that we're also are hoping to do is continue to look at ways that we can get participants to buy more into the program and to want to take part in this program. Jail's the easy way. This program is a lot of work. And we, as Judge Patak has stated, I mean, there's self-help groups they have to do twice a week. They have to do mandatory drug testing randomly.
Yippee, I think, to
several,
them, yeah.
many times over. So we're keeping close tabs and watching to make sure they're not using. And we're, in some ways, invading their lives. We get in their lives and figure out what's going on, what they're doing, what they're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely want to also continue to increase our doors to allow for more people to come into our program. So we're hoping to move up to 50 participants in the near future as well.
Really? Well, those are really great goals, especially working with surrounding areas to brainstorm and collaborate on ways to improve and create best practices or evidence-based practices so that we can see some higher success rates. Great. So could you provide either one of you a website or a phone number in which someone could visit the website if they wanted to get additional information?
They could contact me as a coordinator, and that number is 262-632-1780. Or they can, of course, always talk to their attorneys. Is a really good way to get information. And another thing that they can do is go ahead to the Circuit Court website, and there's a link on there underneath specialty courts, and there's a link for drug court, Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court.
Okay, and that was Jennifer Hoffmeister. For those individuals who will be calling the phone number, you can reach out to her, and she can provide you additional information. So before we end our discussion, I would like to know if there's anything else that either the three of you would like to provide to our listeners that may solidify the purpose and the goals of the drug court.
Another type of specialty court that we've developed to serve the citizens and veterans in Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth County is the Second Judicial District Veterans Treatment Court.
Okay.
It is a mirror image of the treatment court with one exception. It accepts people who are veterans. It then uses the system of pairing a veteran with people who are also veterans, who are volunteer mentors who come into the court.
Really?
And serve as veteran mentors. So you know, there is an opportunity for citizens in our area who are veterans to come forward to volunteer to be veteran mentors. The obligation would be to be available to help veterans on an as-needed basis, not to be a counselor or a treatment provider, but to help them with daily issues, transportation, be someone to talk to about a problem, that sort of thing. It sort of is a reflection of the buddy system that exists in the military.
Very good.
And uses that to help them. And then the veteran mentors appear in court when the clients are appearing and meet with them there as well. So I'd encourage people who are veterans who might be interested and have the time and are looking for something to do to give back to contact either Jennifer or the Racine County Veterans Service Office in the Workforce Development Center on Taylor Avenue. They would be able to take information from an individual and connect them with the right people to get them involved. It involves some training.
Mm-hmm.
Again, involves some obligation for some time and also coming to court when the Veterans Treatment Court meets.
I guess one thing I would like to add is we do have a lot of different treatment providers that we do work with locally here in the community. And addiction is very tough disease.
It is.
And it really is a process of gaining recovery, but you know, for an individual to get recovery and to stay sober and go through all this hard work, the rewards of it outweigh all the hard work that they will initially start doing
Most
to
definitely.
Get sober and to stay sober and to change their lives.
Most definitely. Thank you so much for that additional information. All right. Again, listeners, we had Judge Patak, who is Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court Judge. We have heard from Jennifer Mador, who's Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court Evaluator, and Jennifer Hoffmeister, who is Racine County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Court Coordinator. I thank you guys again for being able to meet with me to discuss this issue that benefits our community. And listeners, I thank you for joining us again yet another Saturday to open up your minds and open up your hearts on ways in which we can better our community collaboratively. Hope to hear from you or hope to talk to you next Saturday. Bye.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Jazz returns to Kenosha's lakefront Saturday, August 15th with Harbor Park Jazz, Rhythm and Blues. New Orleans Rebirth Brass Band headlines. Also, the Kenosha Jazz All-Star Tribute Band and the Frank Catalano Group. Proceeds benefit the Mary Lou and Arthur F. Mahone Fund, promoting healthy lifestyle initiatives and educational and career opportunities for all students. Tickets at MahoneFund.org, a supporter of WGTD.
On Saturday morning, August 15th at 11:15, it's the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast of a summer comedy classics trio. featuring Ozzie and Harriet, The Great Gildersleeve, and Our Miss Brooks. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, Dunn, and McTernan. The WGTD Radio Theater, Saturday morning, August 15th at 11:15 here on WGTD-HD.
...24-7 jazz on WGTD-HD2. Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more, airing right now on HD2. For more information, go to WGTD.org.